page 530. Mishnah 554 at the bottom page. At the bottom page, 554. Mishnah 19. Rabbi Elazar Omer, have you shofud lilmud Torah? Be, how does it translate it? Be diligent. Be focused in your learning of Torah. Have you shofud lilmud Torah? Be focused in your learning of Torah. The dam ashtashiv lapikoros, and know what to respond to an apikoros. An apikoros, in purest terms, means somebody who's a denier. Somebody who denies the existence of God, somebody who denies that the Torah is Min HaShemayim, somebody who denies somebody who is disrespectful to Talmid HaChamim, such a person is apikoros. So Rishon says you have to be diligent learning Torah. Torah is not going to come without diligence. And number two, b'dama shetoshiv apikoros, know what to respond to an apikoros. It doesn't say that you have to respond to the apikoros, by the way. It says know what to respond. But the best way, people take courses all the time on how to answer well, this question and that question, the other question, and Kiruv, you know, what do I say to somebody who says this, what do I say to somebody that? If you learn Torah, you know what the answers are. If you learn Torah, you know what the answers are. And most of the time, you don't need to give answers. Somebody's listening for answers, nobody's asking questions. When it says the Damash, it tells about because even before you know what to respond to, because the first question you have to ask yourself is, why should I respond? If the little old man in Shul comes over to you, there's always a cynical little old guy in Shul who says a yeshiva bacher sitting around, and he's got cynical questions about Judaism. You got to know if he's waiting for a response or not. If he's not listening to a response, you don't answer at all. In general, the rule in life, those who have relatives who are not observant, or friends who are not observant, or somebody and you're trying to interest them in Judaism, any questions that they ask you, it's going to be futile to try to answer their questions unless you determine first, are they asking you a question or not? Mishnah says, "Dama shetashiv l'apikoros." You have to know what to respond to an apikoros. Respond means you are responding to a question. And even if somebody says something to you, that's not necessarily a question. I told you that many times in life. You could say something to somebody. If your roommate says to you, "Hey, why did you touch my CD? And why did you touch my iPod?" Right? He's going to ask you a question. Right? It was an implied threat that if you do it again, right, it's your last conscious act. It wasn't a question, it was an answer. If you say, "Hey, why did you touch my iPod? Why did you go to my drawer?" It wasn't a question like, "Oh, because I was looking to see if there's anything good to rip off. Oh, okay, that's all I wanted to know. Thank you." It wasn't a question, and then you gave him an answer, and everybody's happy. It wasn't a question. So if somebody asks you a cynical question, it's not a question. A cynical question is a statement. It's just a statement in question form. Somebody makes a cynical way to, "Do you really think there's a God if he can let 6 billion people die? Blah, 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 blah." Whatever. No, that wasn't a question. You're making a mistake answering because he's not going to listen. He's not going to hear what you say. Therefore, it says, "Dama shetoshiv," know what to answer to the Apikoros. When the Apikoros has a question, then you answer. Now, furthermore, you have to determine what's the benefit of answering him going to be. Sometimes in life, if a person asks you a question, just because he asks you a question, I mean, you might be better off not answering anyway. But what are you going to gain by answering? You always have to ask yourself that question. It's not enough to know what the answer is. You have to know what you're going to gain by answering. And sometimes in life, you're better off just being quiet. Now, Bida, Lifnei Mi'ata Omel, know before who you are toiling. Sometimes you feel you haven't got the energy when you are supposed to mix it up with an apikoros. Somebody just asked me recently about debating with his neighbor who's a born again Christian or something. Right? You have to know. I was in America, and I think I was doing something important, watching a football game. I wanted to visit. My wife comes in today. She says, "Can you come out to the living room? Someone's at the door." So what was it? A couple of Christian missionaries at the door, my in-law's house. Right. So they came in. There's a rabbi. They want to talk to me. Yeah. So they said to me, "Do you believe?" Two young ladies who were missionizing, going door to door, you know, collecting for this, that, the other. Yeah, not Jews for Jay. Yeah, some other missionary group. So she looks at me and she says, "Do you believe in the kingdom of heaven?" So I said, "Yeah, but it's probably not the same heaven as you believe in." Right, you know, and then we started talking, and I'm doing myself, "What I got to tell about Torah Messina? What I'm wasting my time for? There's no mitzvah to be makarv them. They're going to go in one ear out there. What are you wasting time for? There's absolutely no mitzvah to become, no mitzvah to try to interest them in becoming from being Jewish. They're not even Jewish. So you have to know, sometimes it's going to take up a lot of time and energy. So Mishnah says, the dali simiyata omel. In situations where you do need to talk, where there is somebody who is worth talking to, and you feel that it's an exercise of futility, dali simiyata omel. Be aware who it is you're toiling in front of. You're in the presence of God, and God is watching you, and you're going to be rewarded for your efforts. We're going to explain, talk a little bit more of this in a second. Yenemanu ba'al malachtecha sheyashalem chaskartu losecha. The Baal Malacha, your boss, is faithful, is reliable, and he will pay you reward for your actions. Now, gentlemen, you have to keep in mind like this. Sometimes there are people in life that the best way to draw them nearer or to be makar of them is going to be by pretending that they're talking about something important. Sometimes the guy wants to discuss, you got some deep questions, right? And he asks you deep questions, which are neither very deep nor questions. Right? But he's got these deep questions that he needs to speak to you about, and he feels good that you are looking at, or you're so impressed at the depth of his thinking, right, which is about at fourth grade girls' level, right, and you are impressed at it, which is very good, because the warmth may draw him in, then you can get him down and sit him in front of a Chumash or a Gemara, and the next thing you know, he'll become pro, because that's what's going to do it. But the idea of discussing with him, that's the Amelusir. The Amelusir is the work, the toil that it takes to discuss something which is which it really is not a major issue at all. All these things like evolution, I can tell you personally, all these things, evolution, do we come from gorillas, we don't come from gorillas, yeah. How old, maybe you do, but I don't, how old the earth is, and is there where the earth is 17 billion years old, or 4.5 billion years old, or exactly how old, all these things, I honestly don't know anybody in all my years who really, really was troubled by these issues, to the point that that was what was stopping him from making any sort of Torah commitment. I don't know anybody who was, you know, I'm just so disturbed by starving people in by the unfairness of people starving in Bangladesh, you know, I can't put on tefillin. I don't believe that that. What happens is people use that as an excuse to justify their desire to run around like they evolved from gorillas. Right? That's what people use it as an excuse for. But if what ends up at the end of the day, those issues are not really issues by people. For most people, the issues are personal issues. When a person feels lack of satisfaction with Torah, he leaves it. When a person feels more satisfaction, he comes back. So we're not such intellectual giants that the intellectual questions, which none of which are very, very sharp anyway, are really the issue that's stopping a person from making his religious commitment. That's what I've seen over the years. Most people, if they're not religious, either because they had a bad experience with religion, they may have had a cheder Rebbe who beat them up or something. I had one guy tell me the Rebbe picked him up and put him on a hook. And in another class, he was in first grade, and he was acting up in class, which he probably was. If you knew the guy, you probably would have wanted to put him on a hook too, but this Rebbe did. The guy was in the middle of class, and the Rebbe went and he picked him up, and he put him right on a coat hook. On the thing, you know, by his shirt, he just hung him up there, and the guy was just standing on the wall. He told me he was moving like a spider. He said, I said, what were you trying, you know, what were you upset? He says, yeah, I was upset. He's trying, what did the Rebbe do? The Rebbe laughed. And the Rebbe said, it was pretty funny. See a kid going like that on the wall, it was pretty funny. So, you know, people have had bad experiences with religion. I heard a doozy, that is a good one. Rebbe comes into the classroom. He's about 25 minutes late. Guy prides himself on coming every morning on time. He comes into class at 25 minutes late. As soon as he comes into class, a little Yankee comes over to him. He goes like this. Right? And Rebbe just a yield the chutzah. Crunch. And he cracks someone right across the face. As the Yankee goes to his desk and he's crying. At the break, 2 hours later, Yankee's mother comes down to the school. She goes to the Rebbe, why did you hit my kid? So the Rebbe says, why did you hit your kid? In all my years as a Rebbe, no one has ever done anything so chutzpahdik to me. And all my years of Rebbe in front of the entire classroom, he goes pointing at him. She says, I want to tell you something. Yankee, yesterday we bought Yankee a new watch. The first person he wanted to show the watch to was you because he likes you so much. He couldn't wait for you to come to cheder. You came into the room, he was so excited, he came over to show you his watch. Right? You cracked him across the face. Brilliant. Good one, yeah? So what do you call it? Rabbi Yankov Kamenetsky, was on his way to Cheder once. They had a big construction site where he was about 6 years old. So Yankov was on his way to Cheder, And the kids were always getting hung up watching construction work. So Rabbi Yaakov was on his way to Cheder, and he came late because he was helping some little old lady. He had fell down or something, was helping her. So he comes to the Cheder, and the Rebbe says to him, "Why were you late?" He says, "Well, there's this little old lady that I was helping." Rabbi Yaakov came and asked, "This little old lady I was helping." The Rebbe says, "Hey, don't tell me stories. You were watching construction, weren't you?" He cracked him up. So Rabbi Yaakov said that not only was wrong for poshing him, not only was wrong for giving him a slap, he says that what was really unforgivable was the fact that the Rebbe didn't know his student. He should have known that Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky doesn't tell lies. The Rebbe had a responsibility to know that the kid does not tell. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky was the Ish Eved. Even at that age, the Rebbe's got an achrayus to know that he doesn't tell a lie. A Rebbe who's a kid comes walking, a kid comes over like this, he should know if this kid likes him so much that he's coming over to show him a new watch. The Rebbe is guilty of not knowing the kid. That's the real avla. So most people who are, what's that?
That's understandable though. Some kids have pointed.
You're right. But it's not understandable. We're slapping kids.
I don't agree.
But
with
even
that,
so,
I'm saying,
I can understand a mistake. But even then, a Rebbe's got a very big responsibility. And Rabbi Yaakov, it's a lot of people who are put off of Judaism because they had negative experiences. So the truth of the matter is that even a negative experience one has to put in a proper perspective. Because a negative experience, okay, what about all the positive experiences? Just because one Rebbe mistreated you or one principal was unfair to you. Now, I've heard all sorts of horror stories, right? But there are all sorts of good stories also. Right? There are all sorts of good stories, but you know, what about all the people always focus about what the negative that the frum do? Like, oh, those miserable ultra-Orthodox, you know, they smoke. Right? Yeah, they smoke cigarettes. Yeah, and what? Wow, they're terrible. Really, you know, they just arrest a whole bunch of them. Right? Well, you know, what about all the good they do? These are the same people who have been hosted at their houses for Shabbos. And you always have to keep it in proper perspective. So people get put off of Judaism generally because they had a bad experience or they don't find that there's going to be any sort of fulfillment or contentment for them. But when a person sees that there is a potential for fulfillment, that's what's going to be makar of them. So when the Mishnah is talking about answering the questions of the Apikoros, just don't be disappointed if there's somebody who you absolutely run circles around him intellectually, and you don't see any movement religiously, because at the end of the day, that's not the issue. Many people overlook what the real issue is. The real issue isn't the intellectual proof. The intellectual proof will come. The intellectual proof is not the issue. The issue is that a person sees religion as something that is old-fashioned, it is limiting, and it promises a lifetime of misery. What you have to focus on in our day and age is to show people that there is fulfillment and joy in religion as opposed to misery. Don't focus on the intellectual proofs whether or not we come from gorillas. The next one, Rabbi Tarfon Omer. Rabbi, did you ever read Laser Silver? Laser Silver was the Rebbe in Cincinnati, if I'm in the United States. Rabbi Laser Silver was in the... Was it called after the war, after the Second World War, where they put the people? The DP camps, right? And he was in the DP camps, right? Where he was helping the Jews out in the DP camps. And they were trying to put together a minyan. Might go daven. So he's getting these broken Jews who've been through the Holocaust. He's getting a group together to go make a minyan for Mincha. And he goes, there's one old guy, he says, "You want to join us for a minyan?" And he says, "No." He says, "Why not?" He says, "Well, I was in the barracks in the concentration camp, and in the camp there was one Jew who had a sitter. One Jew owned a sitter. And everybody wanted to daven. That's all we had. We only had this one sitter. Everyone wanted to daven. And this Jew wouldn't let anybody use a sitter unless they would give up their day's rations to be able to use the sitter." Right? Yeah, a miserable person. Here he's got a sitter and he won't let people use it unless they give up their day's rations. That's the kind of Jew, that's what a person does with a sitter, then I'm not davening. So Rabbi Silver said to him, "Why are you focused on a guy who was selling the sitter? Why don't you focus on all the people who are willing to give up a day's rations in order to make use of the sitter?" Right? So the guy went to daven there. You understand? In life, you have to focus. You can always focus. You want to find something negative, you always find something negative to focus on. But like anything else, we never claim to be perfect. We never claim it's a utopia. But take a look. Focus on the society, and you'll see that the good far outweighs the bad. Rabbi Tarfon Omer. Rabbi Tarfon says, "Hayom kotzer, the day is short." The day is obviously a metaphor for a lifetime. Life is short. It goes quick. Before you know it, you turn around and you're 5 years older. Right? Every time you turn around, I can't believe I'm this much older. I can't believe I'm this much older. And it goes very quickly. The next thing you know, a person thinks he's got time, and all of a sudden he turns around and he's on the other side of 20, on the other side of 30, on the other side of 40, on the other side of 50, and he sees that time is running out. They always talk about being middle aged, right? Guy's middle aged. Right? He's 59. He's middle aged. 59 ain't middle aged. 59. Guy's not. Most people don't live to 118. Right? 59 middle aged is if you live to 118. Most people don't make it 118. Guy's lucky if he makes another year. Right? 59 is not middle aged. Right? That middle age is always, you know, no matter what you are, you're middle aged. Nobody's ever old. You're always middle aged. Well, you're not. You get old quick. And therefore he says, Hayom Katzer, the day is short. And people always put off, you know, I'll do it tomorrow. Now we'll do it tomorrow, we'll get there next year, we'll try, we'll start picking ourselves up. It doesn't work that way. Hayom Katzer, time runs out quick. The Amalacha Meruba, there's a lot of work to do. The Apoalim Atzelim, the workers are lazy. That's us, by the way. The workers are lazy. And people always feel that, you know, I really plan on doing it, I really plan on getting focused. I'll do it probably next week or next month or next year or the next day. It's not going to happen. It's like a guy sitting in front of a TV. Guy sitting in front of a TV eating a can of peanuts, right? After he just finished a bag of corn chips. And he's sitting there in front of the TV saying, you know what, I really got to start jogging. You know what, I think I'm going to start jogging. I'm going to think of jogging. Then they spend the next week telling people, you know, I'm going to start jogging. Yeah, any one of these days I'm going to start jogging. Right? I don't want to hear about it. Let's see it. I'll believe it when you start doing it. Right? Because tomorrow night, why don't you start jogging right now? No, not now. Now I'm sitting in front of the TV eating corn chips. Right? What makes you think tomorrow night's going to be any different? Tomorrow night you're going to be in the exact same position. You're going to come home from work, you're going to plop yourself down like a potato in front of the TV, and you're going to start eating corn chips also. And if you don't have corn chips, it'll be potato chips. If not potato chips, it'll be beer sticks. Right? But that's what you're going to be in the exact same position. You're going to be semi-horizontal, semi-vertical, watching a TV, eating. That's what you're going to do. What makes it going to be any different, any easier to put down the food tomorrow and start jogging than it is now? Maybe you guys say, I'm thinking of starting to play guitar. Really? Yeah, tell me about it. We're talking about when you can crank out your first nigga. Yeah, then I'll believe you. Why don't you start right now? No, right now I'm busy. What are you doing watching TV? You know, but busy always means watching TV, right? Well, you're going to be doing the same thing tomorrow. It's not going to be any easier. Since it's never going to be any easier, you may as well start right now. And if you don't, you're going to see that time goes by, and you're wonderful. You're going to have your own custard, the day's short, and welcome Ruba. That's all I'm failing. You're a lazy bum, right? Which is not you, it's me, it's all of us. There's the human condition is that we would rather remain in the within the downward pull of gravity than within the upward pull. Right? It's much easier to stay horizontal than to do things actively vertical, and therefore we are lazy. There's a lot of reward, not for being lazy. There's a reward for not being lazy. There's only one time that I know the Gemara says that people it's good to be lazy. Anybody know where that is? Besides me, obviously doing averus. Should be lazy when it comes to doing averus. Where does the Gemara say that lazy people are praiseworthy? Where does the Gemara say lazy people are praiseworthy? Anybody know? In what context? Yantif. Gemara says, Mishabeach ani es atzlonim. One of the Gemara says, people who stay home on Yantif, and they just stay in the house and they kind of dray around in the house and they eat and sleep, that sort of thing. In other words, they yuntif out, right? Those people, those atzlonim, instead of running around and going from place to place, they stay home on yuntif. That's mishabeach ani es atzlonim. That's praiseworthy laziness, right? Isn't it interesting? That dafka on yuntif is when you're all restless and you feel like getting out and going to do something. Yeah, let's go for a hike. Right. Why don't you go for a hike on Tuesday night? No, Tuesday night I was watching TV. Right. Now Yantif comes around when you're supposed to sit around with your family and you're sitting around with family, and all of a sudden people get restless. Let's go play some ball. Right? Yeah, Yantif, there's a shy, like, could you play ball on Yantif? There's no air. Yantif, you want to play ball? When's the last time? I haven't played ball in years, so let's go play ball on Yantif, right? And Yantif, all of a sudden we got all the sharp, all the action Judaism begins on Yantif, right? Mishabeach on Yisatzlan. That's how the Yisrael works, by the way. Exactly what you're supposed to be doing, you always got to do the opposite. Exactly what you're supposed to be doing. That's when you know you're all year long you love to just hang around the house and be lazy. Yomtiv comes around and all of a sudden you got all your energy, right? And therefore it says the asokar harb is a lot of reward. Ubalabais dochei. Balabais dochei means that Kosh Baruch Hu is pushing. The owner is pushing. Have any of you ever worked for a boss, kind of a pushy boss? Have you ever had a boss who's looking over your shoulder, right? Which they have a right to, by the way, since they're paying you. Right, but the boss is, you know, every time you stop and dray around, the boss says, hey, you know, come on now, you know, I'm not paying you to dray around. A guy's paying you, he wants every minute for his dollar, he wants every minute that you're going to be working. Baal Bais Dochek is referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Torah says, the Pasuk says, V'higisabo yomam v'layla. You must immerse yourself in Torah day and night. Now, what do we learn from that? What halacha do we learn from v'higisabo yomam v'layla? Does anybody know? What is the basic halacha we learn from v'higisabo yomam v'layla? You must immerse yourself day and night. We learned that a man, every Jewish male, has an obligation to learn Torah by day and to learn Torah at night. You've got a chiyuv, a minimum obligation to learn some Torah during the day and some Torah at night. How much Torah do you have to learn during the day to be Yotze your mitzvah?
Shema.
How much of Shema? You happen to be right, by the way. Just one word. That's all you got to do. Shema. Right? If you open up a chumash, right? You open up a chumash. Shema. It's a pasuk in chumash. Shema. That was good. I finished that. That was my seder. My morning seder. I finished that. Next morning, you open up. Yisrael. According to Gaon, you've just been the kind of mitzvah of the Torah. You learned one day during one word during the day. Learn one day at night, that's the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Now you're not going to become a major scholar that way. Right? Within the first week you'll finish one pasuk. Now you're not going to be a major scholar that way, but that is the minimum requirement necessary in order to constitute limud Torah b'yom v'gitzabo yomo v'layla. But that's only the minimum requirement. Yeah, no?
But the more Torah you learn, the more scholar you get, no?
Right.
So if you say two words, you get more scholar.
100%. For every word you get, you're going to get scholar. That's why if you learn Torah for a minute, if you learn Torah for 1 minute, the Chabad Chaim made a calculation that the average person could speak 200 words a minute. The average person, when he speaks, Chabad Chaim made his calculation with regards to Lashon Hara. If you're involved in a good, juicy Lashon Hara conversation, where every word is usur, where every word is an avera, so the average person speaks 200 words a minute. So 200 words a minute, in a good 10-minute conversation, you've racked up 2,000 averas. Right? 2,000 averas. For each one of them, there's eternal pain, anguish, and suffering. That's 2,000 words in a minute. Now imagine a good long hour conversation, right? Really, you know, you have a class reunion. What are class reunions? Where everybody who's there speaks about everybody who didn't make it. That's what class reunions usually are. And then you're replete with Lashon Hara. Now for 1 hour, you could rack up, you know, really do yourself proud in an hour, about 12,000. So what is it? 12,000 avers? How many do you get? 100? Sorry, 100. How many avers do you get in an hour? 60 times 2,000. Yeah, why chin? Well, you know, what do you call it? 120,000. Why skimp? 120,000 avers in an hour. That's great, isn't it? Now imagine you learn Torah for an hour instead. 120,000 mitzvahs in an hour. 120,000 mitzvahs in a day, if you're a big masmid, you become a millionaire every day. You don't even have to split the winning ticket 8 ways either. You become a millionaire every day. Right? A millionaire every day. That's every word's a mitzvah. But if you want the minimal obligation is 1 word by day, 1 word at night. Now, it comes along the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, the God's pushing us. Where do you see God is pushing? Because that same pasuk says, V'gisabo yomam v'layla, means you have to be immersed in it day and night. There's a minimum, 1 word by day, 1 word at night. But by what you say, there's no such thing in Judaism as being bored. If a Jewish male has nothing to do, if you've got nothing to do, you open up the sefer and you learn. You're bored? Go learn something. That's your obligation as a Jewish male. You have an obligation to study Torah as often as you can. If you need a break because your mind, you're tired from whatever it is that you've been doing, you're concentrating and learning Torah too hard. So then you don't have to. Then you're free to not learn. But if you have the opportunity to learn and you have free time and there's nothing that's stopping you, then you've got an obligation to study Torah. And if you don't study Torah when you have the opportunity to do so, it's called bitul Torah. Bitul Torah means wasting time that you could possibly be studying Torah. If I would put a money machine down on the table and I would say to you that you could pull out as many $5 bills out of this machine as you want, any $5 bills that you pull out in the next 20 minutes, you get to keep. Right? Start pulling $5 bills out of the machine, you keep anything that you pull out. Right? What would happen if your cell phone would ring in the middle? Keep on pulling out, right? But it might be your friend at another yeshiva, right? You know, it might be your cousin who's visiting in Israel. You know, it might be your parents, right? It might be the President of the United States. No way. I'm pulling $5 bills out of a machine. Bitul Torah means you have the opportunity to be pulling out $5 bills out of a machine, except it's worth a lot more. Spiritual currency. The person neglects it, it shows he doesn't believe in the true words.